Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for a very happy review of that Christmas game against the Texans and the defense we're going to talk about first. A very special guest from my distant past is Charlie Polillo. He's in Houston. He's been all over Houston radio, Houston sports talk, Houston sports everything for the last, 35 years, Charlie?
Yes, but no discernible draw. I actually don't own cowboy boots. Probably should rent them when I go to the barbecue cook-off at the rodeo. But I still have arrogant Yankee roots and jeans.
All right. I thought for some reason I thought you were a Mets fan way back when, but maybe I'm wrong about that, being a Long Island boy.
Well, I don't want to bore Raven/Oriole fan listeners, but longer story, as short as I can make it. Formative years, the Mets were terrible, lived closer to Shea, so would go there more than Yankee Stadium. But when you're cutting your teeth on the Munson, Willie Randolph, my first ever true favorite player, Yankees, gravitated that way. They won their two World Series, and I got in a simulated baseball league with my friends. The Yankees were taken previously. I was not going to be the Mets and have my friends beat my brains in, so I adopted the Montreal Expos.
Yes, I remember that.
I was all in on the Expos for about 5 years, and that's enough of that. So the
Charlie,
Tim Raines, Gary Carter, Andre Dawson era, one of the great teams ever assembled that never really won anything.
Charlie, my broadcast partner at Syracuse for what, a year and a half, whatever it might have been?
It was 1 year of the late, if not lamented, Friday night sports wrap-up.
There you go. With the special reclamation project, baseball player at the time was? Don't remember.
Refresh my memory. When you
Vida
tell me
Blue. Do you remember Vida Blue was having a big comeback at that point? We thought it was kind of cool. And
gotcha. Okay. This would be the 40th anniversary autumn of said show.
It was a lot of fun back then. And I'll tell you, two people at Syracuse probably convinced me more to get out of broadcasting at the time. And one was you, Charlie, because you came in so polished as a young man and really energetic, always on the air and always just very in control of your own self and whatnot. The other was Dan Hoard. And you've probably followed how great his career has been. Dan Hoard, really more of a contemporary of mine. Charlie is a 3 years younger, I believe, if memory serves. But Dan Hoard, contemporary, and he's gone on to be the voice of the Bengals. And the ultimate personal triumph, something I've never been more proud of a classmate ever for. He's been mentioned on The Simpsons, specifically by name, in a very big
and,
moment.
And a fantastic guy. And
yes.
To throw one more dated Syracuse reference in, credit to Dan Hoard. I hope he doesn't mind the credit all these years later. But when summing up Jim Boeheim, the longtime, phenomenally successful and irascible Syracuse basketball coach Dan Hoard once uttered off air, if a hemorrhoid could talk, it would sound exactly like Jim Boeheim.
I never heard that one. That's very good.
That was a mic drop moment off mic.
All right. Well, let's get back to this Ravens game here. Ravens take a commanding lead in the AFC North race. If you look at gambling markets today, it's now 92.4% based on gambling markets that the Ravens will win the North. I just checked it a couple of minutes before we got on air here. A home playoff game means a lot to season ticket holders. Now, I know there's a few Ravens fans out there who say, we don't care about a home playoff game because they haven't been that successful at home. They managed to lose to the Chargers and they lost to the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. I can tell, keep it to yourself. As a season ticket holder, I want a home playoff game. So screw you. Okay. If you don't really care, and it's just, it's you're throwing away somebody else's money effectively.
Well, I think the practical consideration is be the three seed, handle business. And in the event Buffalo gets knocked off, then you get a second home playoff game, right? It's easy to bump up from the three, then from the four. I think you can get too cute sometimes trying to game the system, right? The Steelers, frankly, whoever the first wild card winds up, probably going to be a favorite at Houston, given the state of the Texans. And, well, in round two, would you rather have to go play at Kansas City or at Buffalo? In the Ravens' case, they annihilated the Bills, right? At Baltimore, lost to Kansas City way, way back when. I would rather go right now. You know, Kansas City wins all these close games. I think they're liable to get picked off in a home playoff game, more so actually than Buffalo. But as always, we're just guessing, some more educated than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good one. And one of the other things that I think behooves the Ravens is we're big fans of the Cincinnati Bengals right now. I think they are the most dangerous potential number seven seed in the field. They're not likely to get it done, but they might, you know, and they hold their destiny in their own hands if they win this Sunday. Well, actually, they hold their destiny in their own hands currently to get to the final week with a chance. So that's the thing they hold. They still need a Chargers loss and a Denver loss, and the Chiefs may have no interest in getting the Bengals into the playoffs. But a good... If a Bengals team is in, it could mean that the Bills will have to play them. The Bills certainly have had some problems with Cincinnati over the years. And it could also mean that if they win that game, that they would go to face the Chiefs, which would at least be some challenge in that first game, I think, for them.
Hey, in a single game scenario, and the Bengals would feel like they got the phone call from the governor, right? Clemency granted, you're in the postseason, and Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, they can hang 35 or 38 on anybody on any given playoff Saturday or Sunday, or they added a Monday game yet, inevitably coming. So I'm with you. The Bengals have the capability of winning a shootout with anyone, as opposed to the Chargers coming all the way west to east, warm weather team coming to a possible frigid game in early January. So, yeah, I would think the Broncos trying to close out the Bengals, but they'll have to win in Cincinnati to do it Saturday. But the Broncos then, they get the Chiefs in Denver, a game devoid of meaning to the Chiefs, right? Mahomes, et cetera, not going to play. I mean, the Chargers, if they can't win one of two road games, but at New England, at Las Vegas. So I think the Bengals need quite the confluence of events if they're to get in there. I think that the Chargers should win 11, certainly at least 10, and the Broncos have that whole card home game against the Chiefs team playing for absolutely nothing.
Denver is the team that they would have to depend on losing, and it does not seem likely. I would agree. Motivation's everything in Week 17 for sure. Let's get back to this game for a little bit. Ravens, few of the things that they had not been doing at quite the Ravens level the last few weeks turned back in their favor. They won the missed tackle battle 13-5. We talk about on this show all the time, the Ravens' central characteristic as an offense is to force missed tackles. A couple teams the NFL are very good at it, Pittsburgh and Baltimore being probably the best two with the running games they have specifically, but also with the receivers, and fast, juky receivers are one way to get it done as well. They also only had one defensive foul. It was the foul on Humphrey, probably was ticky-tack at best and phantom at worst. And certainly the I'm not saying the officials called an unfair game because they called a completely phantom face mask on Derrick Henry.
The most penalized team in the NFL, right? Going into that game, the Ravens. And, you know, what curve do we grade a game against the current state of the Texans? The Ravens dropped their first two, 11-3 since. Clearly an upper crust team. Texans started quickly, 5-1, but it was kind of a paper tiger, 5-1. They're in a garbage division. They're 4-1 against the AFC South. They're 5-6 against everybody else. They played six teams that you would say are a first cast NFL team. They beat the Bills back in week five by a field goal, a game where Shakir, Allen's number one target, did not play. Ed Oliver, their best defensive player, did not play. Nevertheless, Texans won that game. Otherwise, 0-5, annihilated at Minnesota, annihilated Christmas Day. A purple haze, I guess, envelops the Texans if they get in against it. I hope they don't have Northwestern added to their schedule anytime soon.
They
blew a huge first half lead against Detroit. They lost on a field goal at the gun at Green Bay, and they were reasonably credible in defeat at Kansas City prior to the Ravens game. But bottom line, 1-5 against good teams. They also got worked by the Jets. They have a loss at home to the Titans. So they're a rather soft 9-7 at this point. Hang on a second. Odd, Derrick Henry just gained another 7 yards.
Always the brilliant pause in the announcing. I was going to say, I don't use that technique, or at least I haven't found myself using it lately. But if you want to count it up on me during this show, please feel free. Another top shelf performance by the Ravens secondary. The rest of the NFL does not understand right now that the Ravens pass defense is probably top three in the NFL right now. They went into a game against the Texans. It's true, where the Texans were number one in terms of DVOA.
You know, it's interesting in the NFL, as opposed to Major League Baseball, over 162 games, statistically, by and large, things are going to come out in the wash and tell a lot of truth. In the NFL, we were talking 17 games, numbers can get skewed by a couple of really bad performances, a team that starts very slowly or vice versa. You know, that going into the Houston game from a Texans fan's perspective and saying, well, here's maybe where the Ravens are vulnerable. But the yardage that they'd allowed in the passing game, if a quarterback had amassed that number, been the fifth highest total in the NFL, 26 touchdown passes, only 9 interceptions. But the bigger number as it impacted Ravens-Texans were the Ravens sack numbers. C.J. Stroud was absolutely terrible in the game. So it's just alibiing that, well, he's running for his life every snap. There are barns around Houston that if they could talk, the broadsides would be saying, CJ, hit us. We dare you. I mean, he was scatter-armed big time in that game, but he's now been sacked, Ken, 52 times this season after eating turf 38 times all of last season.
That is a big increase, but the 52 sacks is also what the Ravens have for the year. Does anybody know that the Ravens are leading the NFL in sacks? Because Ravens fans think that Ravens pass rush sucks. Yeah. That's what they truly believe, and it's actually funny to hear that. We don't have an elite pass rusher. We need Max Crosby. You know, they don't understand where to economize.
And I mean, Van Noy's not a name brand, league-wide, year-in, year-out, hell-raising, pass-rushing superstar. So, okay, he's not Trey Hendrickson or Micah Parsons or T.J. Watt in pedigree. But he's sitting at 11.5 sacks, I think it is now, something like that. And the Ravens, they're kind of equal opportunity, right? I don't know if they lead the league in individual players who have at least one sack, but they have to be really high on that list.
Yeah, they've been higher in the past because they used to get more for defensive backs. And at least like last year, they got 7 sacks out of slot corner. But and it was several different slot corners who did it. But yeah, they've been a very good pass defense these last 6 weeks. They played 5 playoff teams, and admittedly, 2 of those were the Steelers. One of them was the Texans, if you want to denigrate the Texans. I don't think that's fair, but one of them was Philly, and their passing game is not spectacular with Jalen Hurts. And one of them was Justin Herbert and the Chargers. I think you got to give him at least some credit there. During those last 6 weeks, the passer rating combined is 76.3, and they've allowed 4.4 yards per offensive play by those teams, which I think is probably the more impressive statistic.
Yeah, and they're light in the takeaways, the interception of Stroud. Man, Kyle Hamilton's pretty good. I hope people don't complain about him up there. Why do they have more interceptions? So they have just 10. But as you know, there's an element of randomness to interceptions in a given year. Like a baseball hitter in a year where it's going well, that, man, he has an inordinate number of bloops that seem to be finding grass or turf. And when it's not going your way, every line drive seems to get caught. You know, the tip ball that winds up being intercepted as opposed to caroming to a receiver or just falling to the ground. But you throw in the number one rush defense in the NFL, and strikes me as a pretty elite unit. I mean, even nearly a quarter century later, is the prism always the 2000 Ravens? And if the current defense isn't that, it's not good enough for us.
We get a lot of that. And we also get a lot of this defense is as good as the 2000 Ravens, which is just every
settle
time.
Down, yeah.
Yeah. That things out to be ridiculous. Okay. I did want to talk to you about a couple of things that are Texan specific here. The first is Deontay Johnson and tumultuous few weeks in Baltimore, to say the least. A guy who came in, played all of 39 snaps, had five targets, one reception for 6 yards. So 1.2 yards per target, really lighting it up there. Left town, a three-time loser. Yeah, basically been shunned by three teams. The Steelers, the Panthers, and the Ravens. And now we see in this game, and here's the point I want to talk to you about. Deontay Johnson seemed to have a pregame moment with several of the other Ravens players, as if these players had been friends for life. Yeah. He was in Baltimore for what, 4 or 5 weeks? That's it.
It was quite a fling, fruitless. So I don't know what to make of that, whether that's just Deontay Johnson playing cool, that my life's great. It's all going well. I mean, with the knucklehead factor, right, he mutinies his way of an obvious bona fide Super Bowl contender, pouting over lack of reps, seeing the ball, et cetera, et cetera. It's just crazy how it works that only a good team, or at least a playoff level team, I'm not sure to call the Texans a good team right now would be accurate. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm pretty sure it would not be accurate, but only a good team would take a crack at him. I mean, a free agent end of the season. Who wants to bring him in if you're going nowhere with 2 weeks to go? So the first couple of things that tongue in cheek came to mind with Deontay Johnson, gee, if they hadn't been able to pump him for Ravens intel for 36 hours, that game might have gotten out of hand Sunday or Wednesday. So, you know, was there an element of that quick claim? Hey, feed us a couple of their audibles. You're angry at their organization. What can you tell us that we can use in the game? I mean, Steven Sims had the winning edge in the revenge battle. Not that he distinguished himself in the return game. So Deontay Johnson, we get it. Football is the most complex team sport, 11 moving parts per side. At the same time, it's not molecular biology. So if the Texans destitute at wide receiver, apart from Nico Collins, lost Stephon Diggs a couple of months ago, then the gruesome Tank Dell injury, and the cupboard's pretty bare after that, as Ravens fan probably chuckled at during the course of the game. So you bring in Deontay Johnson. You can't tell him on this specific play, you're going deep. For this play, you're running a 12-yard out. You know, you can give specific limited play instruction. If you thought he could upgrade you in this game, you don't have to learn your whole package.
Right. I mean, just the regular play call.
Pick up or anything like that. But the expectation he would not play. And, you know, he gets, I guess, to take part in their glorified scrimmage against the Titans in the regular season finale.
the regular play call in the huddle. I mean, what you listen for by position group is blah, 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 159. at the wide receiver. And so he's going to know, oh, I've got a five route this time. It's, I don't think that differs from team to team. I mean, if they did turn that into words, they'd be making it too complex for the quarterback to deal with it, I think. So, you know, he's got already put together a lot of numbers, you know, that he has to read off his armband typically that do that. But it's from his perspective, it's blah, 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 159. And I'm that number in the middle.
Yeah, so maybe he'd fire Chevy Chase at you. I was told there would be no math and not have to pick up the numerical nomenclature the Texans use. But if they had chosen to, they could have given him a limited number of plays. But when it's 31-2, I don't care what he did. It would have had no material consequence in how that game unfolded.
You know, I think that one of the probably missed delicious ironies for Ravens fans, at least, because Ravens fans have just a thorough disgust for Deontay Johnson. But there is another thing I want to talk about with Riley Jeanette. But Anthony Miller getting his first catch in 3 years in the NFL, being brought up from the practice squad where he's been all year, and getting a catch at the end of that game, beautiful. Just absolutely gorgeous. That would happen in a game where Deontay Johnson has left the team behind. But I guess one of the things I'm seeing said is people posting a video of that pregame get-together between Deontay Johnson and his Ravens friends and saying, I told you it was all the coaching problem. This tells you it was all a coaching problem.
Yes, birds of a former feather still flock together. Mama Gump, stupid is as stupid does, from Forrest Gump. So, hey, if he had a couple buds that he was friendly with, whether he was just a social butterfly and bonded quickly, or maybe a couple guys that he knew before he'd never joined the Ravens, I just think incidental and irrelevant, other than giving Ravens fans one more thing to cackle about the game.
Yeah. Okay. Well, just a frustrating thing. Now, fortunately, of the three teams who he's jilted, they've jilted him, whatever, you know, these parted ways uncomfortably with, the Ravens are the ones who didn't spend a lot of money. They did spend a tiny amount of draft capital, about a, you know, maybe a 20 or 30 slot drop for trading a 5 for a 6, I think it was, to get him. But not the end of the world. Still not something I would ever want to give up in terms of that. Let's talk about the MVP race for a little bit. I just want to get your opinion on it. And as you're an outsider, you presumably have no stake at all in the Jackson. Who is that other guy from Buffalo thing? Josh Allen.
Correct. No skin in the game. I will say, if looking at it through a very tunnel visioned Houston perspective, Lamar giggled his way to a monster game. Josh Allen down here was 9 for 30 in the Bills' loss to the Texans. At that point, it was like, geez, would the Bills be better with Rob Johnson or Doug Flutie than this guy in this game? It's not a mistaken vote to go for Josh Allen, who's had a brilliant year. He does not have Derrick Henry. They beat the Chiefs. They're the only team to beat the Chiefs. They have the second best record in the conference. Of course, like a starting pitcher in baseball, one loss record can't all be ascribed to the quarterback's performance. Then on the other hand, head-to-head, Ravens 35, Bills 10. I have no problem either way. I think what probably works against Lamar more than anything else, maybe call it Michael Jordan syndrome. We want to vote for somebody else. Mm-hmm. Not that Carl Malone was undeserving or Charles Barkley was undeserving, but they just didn't want to give it to Jordan every year. Or it was assumed he's so great, let's define valuable in a different way. So that Lamar already has two, but statistically is having his best year, and Ravens have won 11 of 14. And it's not like they're 9-7, way in the rear view of Buffalo, but Allen has been sensational. So personally, if given a vote, I would very slightly lean Jackson. I mean, 39 touchdown passes to 4 interceptions is an astounding ratio. That's peak Green Bay Aaron Rodgers, not the cartoon character with the Jets now. Like in Brady's Randy Moss record year, he was 50-7. Peyton Manning, maybe 55-10 when he broke Brady's touchdown record with the Broncos. I mean, 39-4. Again, with the math, that's almost a 10-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Yeah. And then you look at QBR, number one, pretty much silly traditional quarterback rating, but number one. So what's the linchpin of an argument for Allen that they're second only to Kansas City? And, oh, yeah, they beat Kansas City.
Passer rating, he's in position to potentially set the all-time record. So that would be, I think if he did that, I think it would be very difficult to deny him. But the other thing is that he's never really been given proper credit in any year for what he does for the rest of the offensive unit. And you can really see this for any of the running backs that have ever played with Lamar Jackson. I mean, they play their best football of all time when they come to the Ravens. Derrick Henry, the last three seasons with Tennessee, had a 46% success rate. Now, did he have a bad quarterback he's playing with Tannehill and with some other goons there? Sure. But 46% is not good for a top back. And then he came here and he said 59%, which is the highest success rate ever for a 300 carry back. In fact, it's the second. Clinton Portis was at 59.3% in 2002, which is the only back who's been over him in 230 plus carries. So he's having a historic season here, and he owes Lamar Jackson a commission on those rushing yards.
And I doubt they'll have the tenure to be thought of as one of the great tandems in NFL history, as opposed to doing it for just a year or two. But name a better one than Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, who there are probably still some people slow to coming around to, oh, he throws the ball pretty well now too. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first drive yesterday, when he takes off, you can just see he's a tailback playing quarterback who is a quarterback. There's nothing gimmicky about it. Mike Vick, other than maybe his comeback season with the Eagles, was never close to this realm as a passer. So it's like Lamar Jackson runs like an Oklahoma quarterback operating the wishbone in the mid-80s, and now he's passing at a Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning level. I mean, that's a pretty stout exacta, and then you throw in Henry, who clearly had more in the tank, and they replaced three starters in the offensive line, right? So, the slow start, maybe a little bit of that to coalesce. Henry, by the way, who cruised to his 147, whatever the final total was, with the Titans, he had a four-game streak of 200-yard games against the Texans. So he'd been a recurrent nightmare for them. With the defense seemingly straightened out, and you talked about the secondary, this obviously is a team that could win the Super Bowl, but I guess in Lamar's case, until he has a huge individual playoff game, that's a cross he'll have to bear.
Yeah, well, that is what it is. And they will continue to raise the limit of what is a huge individual playoff game until it's the Super Bowl, because he's won maybe an AFC championship and lost a Super Bowl. But whatever it is, the goalposts have been moved so many times with Lamar. It's funny. Let's talk about the Texans for a second here before we move on to the rest of the Ravens here. D'Amico Ryans, I hear stuff, and this does kind of relate to Baltimore too. I actually have heard people talking about the need to fire D'Amico Ryans. And also the need to get a new quarterback, make a change at quarterback this last week, which seems to me so absurd, I cannot even say on both counts.
I think generally, whether it's sports, politics, music, food, there's 10, 15% at one end of the spectrum that you just laugh at. Detached from reality. You're entitled to your opinion, no matter how ridiculous it may be. And then you go to the other extreme, and there's another 10, 15% there that, come on, fan bill of rights. You can complain as irrationally as you would choose to. Recency bias, whatever. For those who want D'Amico out, they're going to be crushingly disappointed. He's two seasons into a six-year contract with two division championships. And even if you're playing in the American Athletic Conference or the Sun Belt, as opposed to the SEC or the Big Ten, the Texans had won 10 games combined the three seasons before DeMeco got here. He's looking at 10 and 7. They won a playoff game last season. Now, this season is not successful because you get to drop another cute little division championship banner from a chump division if you lose your home playoff game in the wild card round this year. But they're not going to fire the head coach. The offensive coordinator is much more interesting in terms of, is he definitely back? Bobby Slowick, who year one was getting head coach interviews at a branch of the Shanahan tree, which is losing luster this season. In Slowick's case, the chronic problems in the offensive line. The O-line coach, first-year guy, he's the one I can't see getting back for a second year. He'd been with the Colts for 4 years. It's almost as if he was a Colts sabotage guy to send down here, because it's just a jailbreak, seemingly basic stunts and games where they have veteran offensive linemen blocking nobody. Which way did he go? But DeMeco Ryans is on absolute terra firma. The coordinator, if they have a poor playoff showing, Stroud, absolutely.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Step back, but he had an historic rookie season as a passer, and life's not linear. You know, you don't start off as a rookie and necessarily get better until you win a Super Bowl, if you're going to ultimately get there. But he has been grossly inferior. Some of that due to circumstances around him, the wide receiver injuries. Joe Mixon missed 3.5 games earlier this year, and the offensive line often playing as if in tatters. They have not been destroyed by injuries season long in the offensive line. The guy they lost for the longest period of time was by far their worst offensive lineman. But Stroud, the accuracy has been down. I mean, he was rather candid in his post game on Wednesday. I just haven't made plays the way I did last season for whatever reasons. So at a bare minimum, it's best 2 out of 3. One good, one not so good. Which way does it tilt? For the Texans, bigger picture, they're now halfway through. You know, having the franchise quarterback, air quotes or not, on the cheap, right? On the rookie deal, second pick in the draft, but still, you know, a $10 million cap hit basically for another 2 years before it gets exorbitantly expensive. And oh, by the way, for the wackadoo saying, move off of C.J. Stroud, move to what exactly? Yeah, Kirk Cousins will be out there this offseason. The Texans are a playoff team, so they're not drafting in the top 20 in the first round in what projects to be a lousy quarterback draft anyway in 2025. So there is zero possibility they even contemplate moving off C.J. Stroud. It's not a sophomore jinx. It's a sophomore slump or fall off. And, well, they have plenty riding on what he does as a junior.
Sure. Great, great quarterback. And you know, you couldn't have asked. I mean, the resurrection that the Browns afforded the Texans in right. terms of rebuilding the franchise after the morass of Watson, just unbelievably generous in terms of what they did for that team. We're happy as AFC North rivals of the Browns. We're certainly happy with that. The Browns situation after the Watson contract, don't know if you've looked at it, but they basically mortgaged all of their 2025 future already. And I'm not talking about like in terms of like, have they spent up to the cap right now? If you, anything you look at with the Browns, they've spent over it or they spent very close to it. They've spent literally every flexible dollar of 2025 already. They can't, you know, they can't restructure those dollars. They're already spent. So, you know, it's a tough place to be. And the Texans were the beneficiary. And I wish it had been an NFC team, but happy to.
Desperate and stupid can be a very self-harming combination. And the Browns perfected it. 5 years, $230 million, all guaranteed. And yeah, we vetted his character. We believe in him, blah, 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 blah. Watson, just the football player, quarterback to 4-12 team here his last season, and then quit. Right? He gave himself a gap year. And coming off of that, and then obviously all the off-field stuff, organizationally, the Browns are getting exactly what they deserved.
All right. All right. So week 17, what do the Texans look like in terms of approaching the game and how does this lead them into the playoffs?
Yeah. I mean, they're locked in at 4, so it means nothing. So which side of the coin do you flip to wash the taste somewhat of Christmas Day out to feel like, look like, play like a somewhat competent team? You play it like the dress rehearsal preseason game, the teams that even do that anymore, where, all right, the starters will play till we see one good series. If we get one good drive offensively, that's enough. But with all the hits that C.J. Stroud takes, and another that rightfully had the natives beyond restless, end of the first half, Wednesday, 21 seconds left deep in your own end. Yeah, we're going to try to throw the ball. And sure enough, Stroud gets hit and limps off the field. Ryan's didn't immediately come out and say, here's how we're going to attack it. You're playing an atrocity of a Titans team. You're not going to gain vengeance for having lost at home. Mm-hmm. By going and winning there in week 17. So to me, discretion is the better part of valor. You sit Stroud, you sit Nico Collins, you sit Will Anderson, you sit Danielle Hunter. And you can't sit everybody because it's not like college where you can take 95 guys and have walk-ons galore. There's only so much you can do with a 53-man roster and call up a couple practice squad guys, I guess, for a game. But it's the first situation where D'Amico Ryans has that decision to make. Are we going to compete? Are we going to play the varsity or just completely call it off? Because last season they had to win the last regular season game and did at Indianapolis to win the division, get in the playoffs. This one, you know, and well, if you go out at Nashville and you don't play well, what does that mean for the psyche of the, screw the psyche of the team. If you go out and you don't play well, it's just a sign that you're a lousy football team at this point in time. So I would think cameo plus and no more than that, if that, but that's for D'Amico Ryans and the brain trust to earn some of its money, I suppose.
All right, well, fair enough. Great, let's move on to a few more things about the Ravens from this game. Some general thoughts: they played outstanding ball on third down. Texans went 4 of 15. The fourth down stops were good, and they did obviously have the pass interference penalty on Humphrey that set up the inside the red zone anyway, set the Texans up. But they've been playing well on third down lately, playing good situational football. I thought that there were some easy outs for Stroud in this offense and a lot of good opportunities for check down passes. We overthrew more than I've seen a quarterback throw this season, probably.
It was terrible. He wasn't very good in the Kansas City game against the Ravens. He was flat out terrible. So whether frustrated, you know, there's a little undercurrent. Well, is something wrong physically? Well, if so, from the general manager on down, what a band of idiots that has him on the field for a series when you're behind 31-2 in the fourth quarter. So I just reject the idea that something's not right with his arm, or he had he was on the injured list with a hand contusion a few weeks back. I just think he stunk, and that is that. And when you're out of rhythm, you know, what gets the tumblers to click back in? The time is wasting on the season to find that out. But yeah, there was a sequence where he had Collins on a pretty basic throw on an out on the right side and just simply missed him by 3 yards. And he was equal opportunity, overshooting receivers, bouncing a couple. Mm-hmm. But the very play after Collins, the Ravens put some pressure on him, but it was a simple little dump off to Dalton Schultz, tight end on the left side, as a safety valve throw, who had some space. And he missed that throw. He was just a lousy quarterback. And for the season now, you know, you make the numbers what you will. He's 25th in QBR. So it's not as if he'd been playing fabulous football in the last couple of weeks. Oh, he just fell off the table. He just has not been nearly as good as he was in his rookie season. Anything else is sugarcoating.
Well, we look forward to them potentially knocking off the Steelers in round one. At least be in Houston. It's Steelers are playing some awful football right now. So it is possible. As bad
resistible as force versus movable object.
Yes, matchup. Exactly.
It's Texas exactly beat that. Them 30-6 here last season, which of course means nothing for this season. I just thought I'd throw it in.
Yeah. All right. Well, they've got a good pass rush still. They've got three guys who can get after the quarterback, and I don't think there's another team that can really put up three as good as their three. It's kind of like the old Toronto Blue Jays outfield argument, where the hell those guys go from the mid-80s, Barfield, Mosby, and Bell, right? Barfield, Bell, and Mosby, yep. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Who makes the biggest mistake maybe between Russell Wilson and CJ Stroud if it gets to that matchup? Because, I mean, Lamar himself neutralizes a pass rush like few others in the history of the game can. But the Texans overall this season have been a good pass rushing team. Hunter and Anderson are a dynamic tandem, but they're soft up the middle. It's not just the Ravens who are able to run on them. You know, they're among the NFL leaders in interceptions and touchdown passes allowed, which is an interesting parlay. But yeah, it's if it is the Steelers, I think it'd probably be pretty close to a pick 'em game at this point.
All right. Couple of Ravens. We need to start talking about the Ravens a little bit in this. Malik Harrison, he's been versatile, had another really bad game against the Texans. We've been talking about the inside linebacker situation here for the Ravens for a while because they had Trenton Simpson at the beginning of the year, moved on from him to a dime defense early in the year, which was a good, by the way, use of Kyle Hamilton. It was excellent choice. Then moved back to Simpson, then decided Simpson's not maybe our guy. Let's alternate him with Chris Board. They did that for a while. And they said, okay, maybe we like Board better, but we're not going to do that. We're going to bring our outside linebacker, Malik Harrison, in to play inside linebacker with the weak side next to Roquan. And then they decided after a while, well, we need him too much at outside linebacker, which is there's nobody anymore in the NFL, by the way, who plays those two positions at the same time. There are outside linebackers who sometimes line up off ball to try and get a better pass rushing advantage. Not talking about that. He lines up as a set piece inside linebacker and also hand in the dirt outside linebacker as well. And as a stand-up outside linebacker, that's just an exceptionally rare combination, but honestly, I don't see it working out for him at inside linebacker right now. And if you're looking at a weakness that the Ravens have going into the playoffs, sadly, I think it might be Malik.
But is that a first world problem, relatively speaking, as opposed to not having a pass rush or being real weak in the back end?
Okay, I get your point. yes, you're right. It is a specialized problem here. Yes, the Ravens do have some offensive line problems, but we're doing the defensive show, and honestly, that's about their worst defensive problem right now. Which is, we are very fortunate. You're right. What else we want to talk about? The Ravens' defensive line dominated the game pretty effectively. I'd say we don't need to go into it much more than that, you know, given the score and whatnot. But it has really helped to have Michael Pierce back, who played exceptionally well again. The Ravens had an exceptional result again, and this has been in two of the three games since he's been back, but they allowed only 2.2 yards per offensive play when he was on the field. His first game back, I think that was the Giants, they allowed only 2.0 yards per play while he was in there. So he's played well, but more importantly, he's playing his own position, And that means everybody else plays their own position too. Broderick Washington plays at the three or the five. Brent Urban plays the five occasionally. And Nnamdi, I have to call him by the right name, Nnamdi Madubuike, plays a few fewer snaps as a very dominating three tech next to Travis Jones. And that pairing is what really drives the Ravens pass rush, those interior guys.
And the Texans specifically, extremely favorable matchup. I mean, they could just ragdoll those guys. You know, other than can amp up the takeaway game a little bit, because I don't know where the phrase took off, but complimentary football. You know, they Trent Dilfer's not the quarterback. They don't need the defense to completely dominate and win the games. Just don't get torn apart. And you expect this offense to score 24, 27 points, at least from the outside, I would.
Yeah, this is a defense that's being tremendously undervalued by the rest of the thing. They were a triple crown defense last year, led the league in sacks, turnovers, and points per game. You can't do any better than that. Anything else is going to be a disappointment. So this year's been a disappointment, and it was a big disappointment when the past defense was in shambles because the two safeties didn't want to play by the rules. And that when they were both replaced, and they were replaced unceremoniously with a week to think about it each on the bench, then brought back in each case, and then said goodbye permanently in each case, it turned out to be much for the better of the team. And a lot of the finger pointing that was at John Harbaugh, because people don't really know enough of the significant names to name blame directly for things. It's always the head coach's problem, right? Because they made some sort of a coaching error, or Zach Orr, they would blame as well. You know, they finally realized, hey, there are problems that basically end with the ball player. And Marcus Williams, he played so well on a per-snap basis his first 2 years for the Ravens. He's injured a lot, but when he was out there, he's great. And this year, he's just fallen completely off. Apparently didn't buy into the system, and it's just very sad.
And, of course, I'm sure from early on, it was, the coordinator change is killing us. Microwave world, what have you done for me lately? Whoop, lately just left town. I mean, lately. But to me, the Ravens seem to be trending up at the right point of the schedule. And it's not just a week or two. They're 11-3 since the 0-2 start. The Texans are soft right now. The Steelers aren't playing very well. Yeah, well, the Ravens woodshedded each of them. So as within the team, I'm sure they're always looking to self-correct, and we can do this better, that better. But how many teams would you feel better about chances of winning the AFC right now than the Ravens? The maximum number is two.
Yeah. Yeah. The teams that are getting a home game against the Ravens are the ones who would have a real shot. I think that the Ravens could very well be a scratch. I don't think they'll be favored, but I think they could be a scratch play at either of those two games. And the place where they're more likely to be an underdog would be in Buffalo. But if there's weather in either case, that's the real fear for Lamar. It's not Lamar's a bad playoff quarterback. He's a bad weather quarterback. When things get really awful and snowy and whatnot, it's not good weather for a South Florida guy. So I hope he does not face a game that really reduces him. Joe Flacco was perfect for January because he was wind resistant as a player and, you know, could throw the ball, you know, through 40 mile an hour gusts. But Jackson is not exactly that guy. His arm might be as strong, but it's for whatever reason, he just doesn't spin the ball the way Joe did and throw it with quite the change of vector risk that it has in wind.
Well, this is where, I mean, they've done good work by committee, but having the battering ram to help defray that, maybe they can just roughhouse X factors. Chris Jones's calf. Mm-hmm. What if that's a lingering issue? I mean, that takes the Chiefs' defense down two pegs immediately if he becomes a part-time player. Certainly if he can't go. So there are wild card variables in there. I would just add that you have two tight ends better than most teams' number one tight end, an offensive line that evidently has developed quite well over the season. But you didn't have Beyonce doing a halftime show at the stadium there. So Houston can weakly hang its hat on that.
There you go.
That's about all. I mean, right, for opening day last season, the wild card game last season, Christmas Day this season. If there was delusions of grandeur, the Texans relative to the Ravens, that was a football snuff film. Bah humbug.
All right. It's just, he can't turn it off, folks. And I'm telling you, I do remember this. It's been a while since we worked together for a longer show like this. I'm usually on a segment on his show in Houston when that comes up. But let's go with packages here really briefly. Ravens only played three packages. They've become the most simplified defense you could imagine these last few weeks. They played base, seven snaps, held the Texans at 2.4 yards per play on those. They played the standard nickel 35 times. No tricky nickel. No big nickel, no rush nickel, no uncovered nickel, no jumbo nickel, none of that, just all standard nickel, 2225, that's all it is. And they gave up 3.2 yards per play on that, had four sacks and one interception. And then they played the four-corner dime they've been playing. And this is a big one, Charlie, because if the Ravens have gone to this, they don't have enough safeties on the roster to field a third safety in the dime. And they really don't like their inside linebacker coverage options on third down. So they feel the need to replace that player, and justifiably so. But they've been using Brandon Stevens sort of in that role, and he's usually, not always, but he's usually matched up against a flexed player or on a tight end. He was even in line and not at the weak side linebacker position. Now, he was a couple times in this game, I noticed, he's more standing like a weak side linebacker. Still very interesting because nobody uses the four-corner dime. Almost every NFL team uses a 3-3. Because it basically doesn't tip your hand to zone or man, and you have a little bit better spy value probably with a safety in there and more of a hitter if you want to take care of a larger quarterback like a Josh Allen, for example.
Well, in boxing, it's styles make fights, right? When you look, as opposed to Philadelphia, and I know it's not like the Eagles hung 48 points on them, but within the AFC, you know, who's the team with the multiple game-breaking, boy, could really use that third cover safety matchup that would be most concerning, right? Kansas City's mixed match. Kelsey's not a big play guy anymore. DeAndre Hopkins is pretty much possession receiver. Plus, you really haven't gotten Xavier Worthy for all his speed much into a downfield passing game. Buffalo's a share the wealth, but not multiple home run hitters, I don't think, in their attack, you know, as opposed to Detroit, also Philadelphia. In the AFC, who's the passing game weaponry that you'd say, wow, that would seem to have the Ravens particularly vulnerable?
In week one, there's no doubt it was the Chiefs who exploited the weak side linebacker and general coverage weakness at inside linebacker that they had. And you know, good quarterbacks will find that guy. I'm not sure if Josh Allen is the ideal guy to do it, but the Chiefs and their coordination is extremely facile at figuring out how to use bunch formations to end up with a linebacker covering a faster wide receiver or even a tight end in a way you don't want to happen.
That was with Rashee Rice, right? And lost
was, he, was he around in week one? I don't even remember, honestly. I don't remember if he played that game.
Same
he
here. It is quite a while ago.
Yeah. All right. The other thing that was a little bit surprising about this game is how light the Texans played. At 1.21, tight ends plus fullbacks plus OL6. Now, they didn't use a fullback or an OL6 in the game, so it's just tight ends. Has that been true the whole year? Have they not had not a lot of 12 personnel?
They, you mentioned fullback. They rarely deploy a fullback at all after last season. I think it was 20% of the time, maybe top three or top five in the league in use of fullback. Not this season. Dalton Schultz is a poor blocking tight end who's been a mediocre receiving blocking tight end. And after him, Cade Stover was a Stroud teammate. They drafted in the fourth round. He's been in and out. Brevin Jordan, who they thought would be a factor at tight end, blew an ACL very, very early in the season. In there, it's called pass catching core, wide receivers, tight ends. They're just woefully thin. One thing they didn't bother trying against the Ravens, you know, the hitch bubble screen type passes. They completed four of them against the Chiefs, I think, for minus 7 yards. So they excised that from the game plan, but didn't come up with anything else that was good. And they had 211 yards against the Ravens. They didn't have 100 yards in the second half against the Chiefs. The expansion 2002 Texans averaged 223 yards per game, I believe it was, and they didn't get to that against the Ravens. There are probably Texans at their facility today wondering what happened to their lunch money.
Now, you probably remember this commercial that came out prior to the 2003 draft about the 2002 Texans. You're nodding your head. That had
literally no offensive linemen, right?
Exactly.
They removed them all except for the center.
So you nice recall. Yeah, that was a great. That was a great commercial. Very funny. But anyway, yeah.
The Texans, oddly something. Enough, found it less than hysterical.
That that draft was a reemergence of a lot of things. But one thing is Ray Lewis came back out as a commercial property in the 2003 draft. And there was a lot of like rookie hazing jokes that were very funny at the time. Like Marcus Trufant was just coming into the league and he was the hot cornerback and whatnot. And Ray Lewis is telling him to, you know, basically carry his laundry. Anyway, some funny stuff came out of that draft.
Was there any upshot when I guess he floated his name for Florida Atlantic or Florida International? Florida saw that head coach story a couple of weeks. Well, we need to hire him immediately.
I don't think anybody in Baltimore would be saying, would really care, honestly. Now, I'd love to see him get a chance at something like that. I was kind of sad that his broadcasting career didn't work out, but it's clearly a case of he wasn't really the perfect guy for that job. And you have a lot of extremely good guys. You still rotate through them very quickly. I mean, the guys who are color commentators are just, I mean, they're here and they're gone and here and gone. I mean, there's very few that have a long lifespan in that role. And the ones that do, I wish they would get rid of them. It's like Bill Cowher, you know, that they keep in that spot, or even Terry Bradshaw. I mean, I'm done with him. I don't think his analysis of the game is really what you do. But, you know, I guess Ryan Clark is one of the few guys who've really been around for a long time in that role. But the ex-players, they don't last for that long in that role, generally speaking.
With Ray, I meant that if he'd said he wanted to get into coaching, especially those grousing about this, the porous state of the Ravens defense, that, wow, Ray Lewis should come be our coordinator, if not a head coach.
No, that has never been said. You probably know this, but they brought back Dean Pease and I think they did some things to try and figure out what was not going right. But for whatever reason, and you might've seen this in this game, Zach Orr, after Ardarius Washington knocked Mixon out at the 1 yard line to stop that drive, came down the sideline and jumped all over him. And you can't see it, but there's this blur comes by where this human like rolls over the head of Ardarius Washington and hits the ground. And you don't really see it. But that was the defensive coordinator. Very relatable guy. I mean, he almost could still be playing today. I mean, he'd start his career in about 2014 or so. So he'd be an 11th year veteran or something right now if you're playing. Had to stop for neck reasons in his case. And it's a very relatable guy is what I'll say at the bottom. I do worry a little bit that he might be too easy thinking that he can get a player like Marcus Williams or Eddie Jackson, who were veterans in the league, to turn around and accept what he wants to run defensively. And I think that's what had to happen is they had to get rid of those two guys. And you know, the Ravens have got it together now and they look like they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender. They may not get there again. I'm sure all kinds of things will go with it, but they are a contender.
Not the case down here. Strictly pretender status at this point.
All right. We will leave the pass rush for the second half of the show. Charlie, really appreciate you spending some time in the first half of the show. I know you have time limitations. You're going to have to leave us. But tell folks where they can find your work or contact you online, maybe, if they have a question about football.
At Palillo, Twitter /X, the Texans podcast is called Texans on Tap, which would be 3.2 or They still make O'Doul's or Sharp. Not very much potency to, but Texans on Tap is the podcast, YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. And we do a weekly Astros called Stone Cold Stros, because the guy who named it is a wrestling guy. So that's the connection on that.
And so what is your weekly volume of content being produced at this point in your life, Charlie? I'm sure it is pretty significant.
No, I kind of sum it up as semi-retired. Whether more semi or retired depends on a week. But we do currently two Texans and one Astros per week.
Okay. Well, that's not bad at all. Not bad at all. I hope you're enjoying that. I know you're still playing a lot of softball.
I am a perfectly mediocre shortstop for my age group. Still have that going for me. And 68 and 75 degree days in late December and early January help too. It's a year-round sport here.
I thought you'd snuck your way into the 68 to 75 age group somehow, which would be a Palillo-esque thing to do. Yeah.
You can let me know how that feels.
I'll get there first. Yes, you're right. Thank you anyway, Charlie, for coming on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, there are some things coming up. There's one I want to pitch specifically. We've had a lot of people who want to get rid of John Harbaugh. Let's put that into a pros and cons list for me. I have a series of pods this offseason that'll discuss exactly that. So all I'm asking is for people to be measured. Give me a list of pluses and minuses, but I'm going to have you on more likely if you have some on each side. I want you to be thoughtful and thorough in terms of how you think about it. But appreciate that. Thanks for all you loyal listeners. Charlie, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate the invite.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.